Welcome back, everyone, to this podcast series where we explore entrepreneurship, in African diasporas. And today I have with me a US-based Nigerian-American entrepreneur and the founder of Eriglow Organics, which is a skincare brand dedicated to crafting premium products that celebrate the inner beauty of your skin. In this episode, I sit down with her to discuss the dynamics of owning a business as an immigrant entrepreneur, the challenges, the joys of being a business owner. Her story is one I think can inspire countless people, myself included. So enjoy the series, and everyone join me welcoming Temitope Abiono to the podcast. Hello.
For having me once again,
my pleasure.
Once again, thank you.
My pleasure. Yeah, you were here last time when we talked about women's health, which was very loaded and had a lot of laughs and all that. But today you're here in a different capacity, and I cannot wait to even unravel your story for the audience to learn a lot from you. So you launched your. Let's just for those that are not familiar with you. I know you consider yourself a northerner, so maybe just brush up on tell us a little bit so we can catch up on, a bit of your background, how you grew up in Nigeria, and all of that fancy stuff.
Of course. So, I was birthed in Lagos, Nigeria, and I think at age 4 or so, my mom got a job in Nasarawa State, and that was how the family migrated to the north. And so I spent the major part of primary school, or the latter part of primary school. No, actually, I was age 4, right? So virtually the rest of my primary school was in the north. And then at some point, because of the quality of education, I mean, coming from Lagos, there was a level of education that my parents had, expectations for, but we weren't finding that in that city that we were. And so they moved us to Jos at some point. Myself and my older sister, we moved to Jos to finish up our primary school, finish primary school in Jos, and then it was time to go to secondary school. I really wanted to go to Air Force Girls in Jos, but then... the known secret is it's really hard for civilians to get into those kind of schools. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. At least at the time, it was really harder for, civilians to get into those schools. So I couldn't get in. And then my next option, I think, was another popular school. But because my mom was in a different city and my dad was the one based in Jos, and as a pastor, he would always travel. They had concerns with us going to a school where neither of them will be. But guess what? We're thrown to the jungle. So, back to Yobe State, I went for my secondary school. So I went to FGGC, Potter School.
Potiskum, wow.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder if it's just one Nigeria we're living in.
I know. So let me tell you how I got to that school. My sister had gone there. We had a guardian who... Okay. So my mom's boss at the time, his wife was a college in the city where our school was. And so they just were like, oh, nice one. This... there's somebody there, you guys can, go there. They said it's a good school, a good federal school, blah, 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 blah. So, yours truly heard Potty School. I thought it was one really fancy.
It's giving American vibes.
And then I get to Potty School, I'm like, hello. I thought we were actually going to fly out of the country or something. And lo and behold, the first meal they ate that night, it was a boarding school. I had no idea what was served because I had never eaten Brabisco before. So Brabisco is a meal made from crushed corn And so they steam the corn, and so it's like rice, right? For that's, so you see Brabisco, because they use white corn for the most part. And so you see that, you think it's some kind of like rice and all of that. And I tasted it and I was like, what is this?
Mommy, come get me.
Yeah. My face.
Yeah.
Nah. And so because, and my parents were, we were very far apart now. My home was very far away from the city where we're schooling now. And even if I cried, and I did cry because I wanted to leave that place, it didn't look like what my imagination was. But it was too late to go back or to change school. We did try to change school, I think in GS3 or after GS3. We had wanted to move back south because now my parents had moved back south because my mom retired from the government and then she moved back south as they moved back south as pastors, moved to Lagos. And so the question was, oh, okay, what are the options for school? Our next option was Federal Sagamu. So I would have really gone to Federal Sagamu, finished from Federal Sagamu because they got our uniforms and everything. But somehow, it just didn't turn out for us. And so I finished my secondary school in the north. And somewhere along the line, I fell in love with northern Nigeria. You know, now I'm far northeast, right, in Portiscombe, been in Jos in the middle, right? And I had seen the variety that exists there, which was different from the craziness and the energy rush that you have in Lagos. And I'm like, wait a minute, I think I'm liking it here. And so after secondary school, I came back to the north again for university. Something happened. That's the story for another day. The way we talk about education in Nigeria.
Yeah.
Because I had my fair share of some of the interesting things that happens in the education sector. However, I did school in Jos, although I didn't go to like regular university. I went to like a distant learning setup. And so while I was in school, I was working as well. And I guess that's sort of like, not that I guess, really, my entrepreneurship journey really started from that young age. And give me amala or tuwo today. I'll eat tuwo anytime. I don't know what you guys like in amala. Sorry. But I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, so in fact, it happens to me. If you want to hurt me, just abuse me as you would say something to a Yoruba person. Mm-hmm. That hits me differently. And we said, I didn't know it was that bad until somebody said, "Ben Yoruba, shaman shame me," meaning
you know, that's
what people do.
And who the Yorubas me?
That's it. The thing hits me. It hits me. I was like, what? What me? Yoruba people? You really want to call me Yoruba people? No. Yeah, so that was my journey. And that's how I grew up. So I grew up with four siblings. I have two sisters and two brothers.
Are you the middle?
Second.
No, okay, I'm second. Okay, all right. So you moved to the U.S. how many years ago?
11 years ago, really.
Okay, really?
In a few days, it'll be 11 years.
Wow, congratulations.
Because I moved in February of 2014, and I remember landing in the U.S., and I was like...
What state? Was it Minnesota?
I landed into Chicago.
Windy City.
And now let me tell you the fun part. You guys can laugh at me, but it was my first culture shock. I came in at night, and as the plane was descending into Chicago, everything I saw was white. Excuse me, coming from Nigeria, I had never seen snow. The closest I had seen snow was on TV, right? And the closest that I had seen to snow was white beach sand. And yours truly thought that, oh my God, this place has white beach sand all over. I did not realize I was coming to the Midwest and the whole place was covered with snow.
Really?
Until I got on the ground and I saw snow everywhere. And I was like, wait. So what was I thinking? Yeah.
Okay.
And then I got to Minnesota and I asked myself at the door of the airport, what are you doing here? Because the cold that hits me at that door was never felt. And mind you, I had lived in Jos, right?
It's cold, yeah. It can get cold, yeah.
Jos is really cold. It's one of the coldest cities in Nigeria. I mean, I thought that was cold. Well, I went to Turkey sometime, and I went when it was cold. So I thought, okay, that was another level of cold. I didn't expect. In fact, on my way here, I came through Turkey. So it was cold there, right? So I thought, oh, that could be the worst of the cold. Boy, I got to Minnesota, and I'm like, no, I need to go back to where I'm coming from, because what is this? Yeah, and that was one of the worst winters that we've had in since I came.
Wow. I mean, I guess everyone has their landing in American story, which, you know, it's fun, but it also depends on the time of the year you came and what kind of city you landed in. I landed in Austin, Texas, and that year was the year they had, this was 2011, so about 14 years ago, almost now. It was the year they had the triple digit weather for 100 and something days back to back. It didn't rain. It was 100 and something degrees every day for 90 days. And I got there in August, right? And it finally rained in October. And I remember it was the day before my birthday, October 8th. But the sun, the sun. I know you're coming from Nigeria and you pack. But then, I didn't know how to wear bomb shorts and all that to school. The way the sun beats me, you'd have thought maybe they took me to Zaria or Dutse, somewhere in Jiga. But yeah, I don't know if I want to trade my heat for your cold. So let's talk about let's talk about your entrepreneurship. How does one go from doing a 9-to-5 to going over to saying, you know what, I'm going to start my own business, especially in the Obodo America, like I would say? Can you walk us through how that realization came for you?
First off, so my entrepreneurship journey started first in Nigeria, right? I wasn't new to, you know, business. When I got here, I had a business, a thriving business in Nigeria, right? A fruit juice business for that matter. And so I've done some things, you know, trading. So because I lived in the north, when I'm going home, I'll take things that are not common then in the south. I'll buy them and take them home. And then when I'm coming, I'm buying things like...
So we're doing the reverse. Yeah, back and forth,
So I'm doing the reverse of things that you didn't have in the north then, you know. So I'll do that. But then, transitioning from 9-to-5 in America to entrepreneurship is... I'm looking for the right word, because I think it's going to be the most courageous thing you'd ever do. Because it has a lot of nuances to it. You do need to adhere with the law, right? You need to even know more about how to run that business. And you need to early on quickly determine if this is a passion or if this is really a business. Because the challenges will hit you sooner rather than later, and you will question your decision. And that's why you see that the percentage of businesses that fail in the first 2-3 years, right,
is very high.
Mm-hmm. It's very high, because it's not a smooth sailing process at all. Yes, there is an abundance of resources, right, to help businesses, but it's still very complex. So you think you've got a grasp of a piece of, you know, owning your business, and then all of a sudden you're realizing, oh my God, what's happening? In my journey so far in the, Eriglo was launched in November of 2023, right? Mm. And in my journey between then and now, there are still things that I'm like, I thought we scaled this and we're still here. Mm. Recently, I had an order from Canada and I had done 3 variety of shipping that used 3 different carriers. But this time around, my customer reaches out to me and say, hey, I am getting an indication that I must pay an import fee for this order. Is that the situation? I'm like, I'm not sure, because I haven't had anybody tell me that they had to pay an importation fee. Let's watch it and see. And then we sat there and we're waiting. I'll be looking like every day, what's going on with this thing? Are they going to release it? Nope, they did not release it until she had to pay that fee. And that made me question, do you really want to
do this?
Yes, the audience of my market is there, but I have to figure out the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Right? I have also had to like immerse myself in learning, really learning the structure of owning a business in America. And I'm finding out, I recently went to a an accelerator program.
Oh, yeah.
And in the program, there were things that were coming up and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know that. You have to have your own insurance as a business to save yourself, right? You do need to have the legal aspect of your business is something that you should not play with. You need to ensure that you have all the adequate licensing and blah, 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 and everything. Logistics is another beast on its own, because I do e-commerce, right? There's just a lot.
There's a lot to figure out.
The point is, before you get to that point of saying you want to transition from 9-to-5 to owning your business, be ready to work triple and put in triple the effort, or even times 7 of the effort that you put into your your corporate career. You know, last night I was I was in production all day yesterday, and at some point I was crying inside, because I'm like, God, this business has to flourish. I cannot be putting in this much, you know, effort into it, and this, you know, but I just have this business not move forward. It must flourish. And I said to myself jokingly, I'm like, if somebody asked me, Timmy, how was your weekend? I said to them, I don't know, because I probably didn't have a weekend to have rested, right? Because, hey, that's the time moving from, I'm at my job 9-to-5, you know, all week, right? What time do I have to focus on, you know, my business? So it's not for the faint-hearted. You must be very tenacious. You must be a determined person. You must be courageous and, you know, be ready to give it your best and give it your all, you know, if possible, to really try.
Okay.
As a business owner.
Thanks for sharing that. I mean, I think what I can tease from what you've said so far is how you made sure you understood the landscape of what you're getting yourself into, and knowing that you needed to equip yourself. So, for example, the accelerator program you went to, and then I imagine that also meant immersing yourself in that whole experience, and also talking to other entrepreneurs to see how can I make sure that I don't go the way of the dodo and my business becomes extinct. So thanks for that reminder. Like, when you're going to something new, make sure you are equipping yourself. It's good to have the drive, but you also have to have the know-how, right?
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about just the anxiety. I mean, I feel like for you to be a business owner, there's this chutzpah you have to have, which I don't think I have it, in the sense of I like control, right? Mm-hmm. And having my 9-to-5 job is a form of control for me. But then the artistic part of me, which I don't monetize because that's my way of just, I think of it like a hobby. You know, mm-hmm. if I had to make money through it, it would stress me out more than it's currently stressing me out. Mm-hmm. I feel like people that go into entrepreneurship, especially small business owners or the people that are just starting, there's this drive you have to have, which, you mm-hmm. know, looking at it, I'm like, wow, how are they doing it? Mm. So I'm curious to know, how do you talk yourself out of that anxiety of there's no paycheck coming in? If I don't put my, you know, butt into it, nothing mm-hmm. is coming in this month. Mm-hmm. And there's so many layers to that, because I imagine you as a wife, as a sister, as, you know, a daughter, you have obligations. And being Black, we have obligations. So how are you doing it? How did you talk yourself out of that proverbial ledge?
That's a huge one, and it's still a work in progress for me. But I must say that what is helpful is for you to quickly detach yourself from the emotions. And the truth is that nobody, well, you'll be fortunate if you have one person really tell you the truth about this, that you will need to be dogged. Mm. And even so quickly. Mm. Because the situation is, if you refuse to remove yourself out of your emotions, you will not move far at all. At all. Let me give you an instance. I probably will send you that picture. I should send you that picture.
Okay, you should.
So I went to this pop-up market, right?
Maybe explain what those are for those that... The one you went to last year, right? The one you told me about.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe so she told us that, yeah.
Yeah, a pop-up market is where somebody organizes bringing together business owners, you know, mostly...
Local, independent,
you know,
yeah.
Local mm-hmm. Business owners, right? And they come to sell to the public, and then, you know, the expectation is for people local to also come buy local, right? And I had shipped myself that day, went to the market. I had this big suitcase and I loaded, you know, the products. And of course, you will go be praying and, Lord, please, you know, let me sell out. That's the prayer. And this. I did not sell $100 that day.
Wow. And humbled.
Girl, the humble pie was huge.
Humility.
As in,
you look like humility.
You're spending several hours. The market has its hours, right? But as a vendor, you will need to be there before the market hours
starts, yeah.
Right? So let's add 45, 1 hour, right, to the market time. And then you will not break up until after the market hours, right? So let's say I spent 6 hours there, which is honestly what it is. I spent 6 to 7 hours on days that I go to the market. And you have to talk. You have to sell your product. And so I expended energy talking about the business, you know, products, you know, standing, talking to customers and everything. And then you come back home with less than $100 and you ask yourself, Edu, what are we doing here? And so I came back that day and I took a picture. And I put on my status, I said, we moved. I'm sure that everybody thought that, Timmy, these products were things that she was going to sell and she had a big sale. and not know that that picture was coming from, what kind of cry should I start crying? Because let me tell you, for me that day I had to use Uber, and so
can you imagine all the expenses you put into it?
I didn't even make nothing. Now, if I sit there and I dwelt on that experience, and I'm not detaching myself quickly, that alone is enough for me to say I'm not doing again. Trust me. And so for you as a business owner, managing that anxiety is one of the best things you do for yourself. And you have to be intentional about it. You know, there are months where the sales are not adding up at all. And like you said, you have responsibilities. You have to pay, right? I haven't paid myself from Eric Glow since the business started. Not because I did not want to, but it is what it is. The business is still growing. And if I'm putting in anything that is coming, I'm recycling the revenue, is what it is.
Into the business.
You know, I have invested so much. The business is self-funded, right? So far. And I've invested so much into the business. If I'm not removing myself and separating those emotions and telling myself that, okay, it is what it is, let's make the sacrifice now. Last night, for instance, or yesterday, that I didn't finish until past 12 a.m.
I remember,
productions that I was doing, you know, yesterday. But what I told myself was, girl, it's okay. You're not going to do this next Saturday, right? So just endure. You're not going to have to do it this tomorrow, even tomorrow. Well, I still need to label. This, I carried on my head. I have that. I had to take a short video. I carried on my head 48 what? Pounds.
What?
Yes, because that's the only way I can get the product from my kitchen.
Point A to B. Oh my goodness.
To my office. I couldn't carry it by, you know, by lifting. The best way for me to carry was to put it on my head, and I had to take a short video to remind myself of the sacrifices down the line when things turn around, right? So it's more like, are you going to be down, or are you going to encourage yourself and be hopeful that better days are ahead?
These are things you don't see. You can't capture that on TikTok.
No, people don't say these things. People tell you how everything, matter of fact, they tell you how everything has been sweet, right?
Yeah. And those make for good stories.
You meet some people who will tell you that they left 9 to 5 and they started their business and boom, they went viral.
Yeah.
It's a lie. Big fat lie. Like, no, you didn't go viral immediately. You went through a process. You've just not told people the truth of that process.
Yeah.
You only tell people, a lot of people just tell of when things started getting sweet and pleasant. They don't tell you the sleepless night. They don't tell you how they're thinking of, the taxes they have to pay. Or they're not telling you of the challenges that they encounter, you know, or even just figuring out certain things. Not many people tell that story. But I met a lady who actually validated me recently. Somebody had seen the product and they were like, oh my God. I made a pitch at the accelerator. At the end of the accelerator, I did present a pitch of the business, and somebody there said, oh, there's somebody that I think you should speak to. You know, she's doing something amazing in the community and I want you to connect with her. And so I reached out to this lady and everything, and we started talking. And we talked about the transition. And I said to her, I said, I've heard a lot of people say they had a smooth transition, quote unquote, or they had an easy transition from 9 to 5. And she said, first of all, you have to erase that. That is not true. Because people will not tell you how they moved. Somebody who may have transitioned may have gotten a grant.
Sit fund,
whatever that cushioned them in that period of transitioning. Nobody will leave certainty for uncertainty. You know, you talked about control earlier, Many business owners also want that, right? But the business will not give them that immediately. You're looking for certainty. I mean, let's even say I come up with my goals, right? And my goal is to sell X number of jars, you know, for the month, looking at, you know, my bills or, you know, whatever, the kind of cash flow that I want. I can have my goals, but is that the reality? Oftentimes not. So what do you do? You know, so for people like us, it is like, man.
It's a luxury, yeah. It's not a luxury, it's just how raw it is, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Wow, thanks for painting that. And was it Ira Glass that said something about, and I am just going to kill me for botching this again, but getting to that point of where you know you should be and where you are right now, there's always that itch, like, you know, I haven't gotten there yet, because you know what the final picture should look like, right? I want to make like a bit of a comparison. So I've been running this podcast now for 7 years, right? And initially there was a drive, and I still have that drive to, you know, get to where I want to be, but it wasn't looking like that in the beginning. As a matter of fact, I always say, if you want to touch on me, just gonna play my first, like the first season I did, replay all of those episodes, because I feel like, oh my gosh, you were so cringe. I can talk about that in the same vein to talk about how I'm glad for those days, because without those days I won't be where I am today, right? They built towards, I knew what I wanted to be as a podcaster. And even though the beginning didn't look like it, I'm not going to despise those days, because without those days, I won't have gotten to where I am today. So given that you just launched your business, right? And it's not even just like a podcast. A podcast for me, compared to something as tangible as what you, I don't want to say tangible, you have a product-based business where people can use stuff and they can talk about, oh, it helped me clear this, it helped me clear that. Well, I haven't even talked about your product differentiation. We'll talk about that soon. But you have products you're selling. You have a skin line you're selling, right? Contrast that to a podcast where, you know, it's all evergreen. Some people can choose to listen to an episode or not, or maybe listen to 5 minutes of it or turn it off and all that. But I struggled with just the confidence in why I'm doing what I'm doing. So I guess my question for you is, how did you, if it's something you're working through, it'd be nice to kind of capture that right now. That confidence in your products, knowing that, okay, I have something solid here, and I don't care if it's raining brimstone and fire, I'm gonna keep it going. Have you gotten to that point in your whole entrepreneurial journey so far?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. I think, first of all, I guess perfectionism is one of the things that that either gets you from that first step, right? Or that first year, that first month, to your X year, right? And a lot of times we struggle with, well, not everybody, but I feel like people with really solid ideas struggle with, I want to get it right from the first time. I want to have a particular kind of feel for this business from the get-go. And that was something that I struggled going past, because trust me, there were certain levels that I wanted to, you know, get to the get-go. But I quickly realized that if I stayed on that, and it dwelt just on that, I will not move forward at all. And so I had to compromise with myself and be like, hey, what is the best that you can do now here with what you have? that will propel you to get to where you really want to go.
Not to be.
You know, to your question, when I look at the pace of business, right, and I'm questioning, why am I here? Why am I doing this? Is this really something that I should be doing? Two things that has helped me. Number one is the calling. Because, hello, before Eric Globe, I was a baker. I was baking and I was loving it, making some scrumptious, yummy, delicious cakes around town. And I loved it and I was satisfied with that. However, what was the journey to Eriglo? The journey to Eriglo started with my problem, a problem that I had shortly after I moved to the US. Between 2014, 2015, I quickly figured that something was going wrong with my skin and I wasn't finding solution from the shelves in the grocery stores. And I tried virtually all the big brands out there in skincare. Mind you, these are products that I was using in Nigeria and I was working, you know. But I got to the real place and I felt like, oh, I'm even where they make this product, so everything should be fine. Now I'm sure of the quality that I'm getting. But it wasn't working for my skin. My skin was cracking, drying, ashy and everything. And then at some point, I'll get like, you know, they have like advanced formula, something. There's always something more that they will tell you the product has. And then I'll get them, I'll do a mix and expect for something miraculous to happen. But nope, we weren't making progress. The height of it was when I went to my doctor and she gave me a steroid. I have that. I still have the bottle for reference sake.
Yeah.
This is it right here for me to add to my
long list of things.
And I'm like, at this point, I said, no. This is not the way I want to go because I had some other health issues that was already introducing me to steroids, right? And so I'm like, no, I'm not about to kill myself or load up my body with steroids. What is the way? So I had to look back and be like, hey, I think I know some things from where I come from. In Nigeria, I knew of shea butter, I knew of coconut oil, I knew of black soap. Was I into those things when I was in Nigeria? No, I was living like a big girl, rich auntie vibes and all of that. But at this point, I'm like, what can I try? And so I started experimenting and I'm making my own body butters. Voila, the miracle we have been waiting for has arrived. Ah, is this working for just me? So I started making batches and I'll share with my close friends. And people started commenting about how this was working for them. Mind you, this is like 2015, 2016, right?
Yeah.
But your girl never thought about running a business out of it. No, I just was doing something and I found a solution for myself. Then when people close to me have babies, I'll just, you know, make a batch and give them for their baby. I never thought about going into skincare until one day yours truly, precious Holy Spirit, convicts me and said, you have a solution, you should share it with the world. Sir, what are we talking about? I am a baker, and that's enough, right? I struggled with moving into skincare. I'm sharing that background to really answer your question. That one of the things that keeps me going and helps me to stay focused on, don't worry, it may be rough right now, there's something better ahead. You will see something better ahead, is the fact that, no, I did not choose to get into skincare, but a mandate came and I decided to run with it. But secondly, is also the humbling results that
I've seen.
There was one that, you know, it's a different thing if people approach your business and they buy the product themselves.
Yeah.
Right? You think that, oh, maybe they know one or two things. That's why they're choosing to buy, right? But there was a lady in church one day, and I saw her baby's skin, her granddaughter's skin, and it was covered with rashes. I knew what it was, right? I knew it was eczema. But I was not going to preempt because, of course, I didn't want to assume. But I made a bold step. And as it played out, I had taken an order for someone who was supposed to pick it up from me that day. And I had the soap. So I make liquid black soap and, you know, the body butter. So I had that. And I said to her, would you be willing to give this a try for your granddaughter? And she now told me the story. She said, oh, yeah, they thought initially that she was just reacting to an injection she got for immunization, but actually it turned out to be eczema. The doctor confirmed that it was eczema, blah, blah, blah. I said, okay, all right, let's have you try this and see. Ayay. She did take it. Now, this was me stepping out of the norm and risking, okay, let's see if this thing is really doing what it should be doing or not. And this lady comes back, I think 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later, and she's like, oh my God, I did not realize you gave me the solution to the problem. Can you see her skin now? By the way, I started using it for myself once I saw the result. I need more for my other grandchild who also has the same thing. And so when I'm hearing stuff like that, I'm hearing you using the product and you coming back to tell me, girl,
it's
doing something. Those are the things that helps me to stay focused and be like, okay, yeah, we may not be where we are today. It may just be that people do not know the value that this product carries, right? The more we get more people to use it, it will get us closer to where we want to get to. So those are things that keeps me sane and, you know, keeps me hopeful about a better tomorrow.
Thanks for sharing that. And I think when you shared that story with me a while back, I was encouraging you to make sure you're capturing that. And all of that. And you sent me your samples to use. I told you about just some of the things that I experience using them, you know, so much so that after I was done with that batch, I had to order more for it because your product really works. And I think the most fascinating thing for me was trying it in two different climates. So you had sent it while we were here in the US, and you know, I had used it and all that. And then I took it with me when I was going to Nigeria, like the body butters, for example, the shea butter one. And the way it held up in the tropical climates, I mean, the grandmas loved the product, which I told you about. So I think you've been able to, giving you that feedback of just the way it stood the test of different temperatures and different climates, and just how it did what it was supposed to do, basically. So I just wanted to share. I've shared that with you, but I just wanted to also add to that conversation you had. So let's talk about Eriglo. You know, for those who are not familiar, I think we should have just started with that. For those who are not familiar with your, you know, your product differentiation, tell us what you guys do, and this is also your time to kind of brag about your products and
Alrighty, so Eriglo Organics is a skincare business, an organic skincare business that uses plant-based butter and plant-based oil to create products. Well, not just butters, but ingredients from plants mostly, because we now make soap, right? And most of our ingredients are also from plants, but they are not butters, right? And other, you know, plants derivatives are things that we use in this ingredient, in this product. And the business started, of course, like I mentioned earlier, from mining, right? And so it helped with psoriasis, dry skin, eczemas. And this was my personal experience first. And over time, you know, seeing, I had my friends, my close friends around here were my testers, magnanimous, you know, to have tested the product and had really amazing experiences with the product. And initially, it was just the butters that we had, and then, you know, moved on to make body oils and then, you know, make the soap. Personally, I struggled with black soap a lot because there's this soap crumbness that is associated with black soap.
This is what?
Soap crumbness. So it's like there's this, I call it shaka. It's kind of like, I think it's crumb that they call it. I forgot the word. I will send it to you.
Okay.
But it has this kind of like hard, harsh, effect that it has on your skin. And so getting into soap making, especially with black soap, was a very difficult task for me. But I'm humbled to say that by the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, I got instructions of how to create our soap and the ingredients to use. And boom, it changed the game. And it doesn't have that feel that most black soap has. I tested this myself. I went to buy organic black soap from Whole Foods. They had two options. I went to buy from Whole Foods just to see if I was making it up, that this, you know, if I was making this thing up and if other people had solved that problem. And I realized that no, many of the soaps, at least the two varieties that I got, had that effect that I didn't like personally. And I was like, oh my God, wait a minute. I think we're doing something right here. Ours doesn't have that. It doesn't have that ashness. So talking about product differentiation,
yeah,
we've been able to beat those kind of challenges, right? And so people will use the black soap and be like, oh, wait a minute. In fact, two weekends ago, I met a friend and she had talked to me about eczema on her son's skin. And I said to her, oh, okay, try the black soap and the Sheer Faithfulness body butter. The Sheer Faithfulness body butter is the version of our butters that doesn't have fragrance, right? So it's just shea butter and the oil that we mix it, which is baobab oil. And we now saw, maybe like 2 weeks after she got the product, and she's like, sis, I know you gave me this thing to use for my son, but I'm sorry, I'm the one using it now. Guess what she was using it for? She was using it as shampoo because her head had been itching. And she had tried different products. In fact, she said the one that pained her the most was that there was one that was supposed to have been a clinical trial or clinical trial proven result or something. So it wasn't even a cheap product that she bought. And still, it wasn't working for her. And then she used Joyful. Joyful is the name of our black soap, our liquid black soap. And she went in and she's like, Kim, no more itching. Mind you, I have been using Joyful as my shampoo for a while, but I've never advertised it as
a shampoo,
something that you should use for your hair.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to. Now, confidence is another thing that I'm working on, being confident and really excluding, you know, and embracing and just understanding that it is what it is. I'm creating this product. It is working. It is doing what it's doing. And it is what it is, right? I'm still struggling with embracing that. I guess maybe because I didn't come from a science background. I'm not a scientist, right? I'm not a chemist, right? Or I didn't study herbalism, right? So it's still, that's one big area that I'm still struggling with. And so it's maybe in a way, I'm being careful to say, oh, the product does this, the product does that. I guess I should continue to work on myself and just accept that, see, God has smiled on me and these solutions are coming from me. And she was talking about this amazing experience that she now has using the product as her shampoo. Like, oh my God, wow. So those things are things that just really, it keeps me humble and just more like, hey, I think you've got something going here. The body oils, fantastic. In fact, I sent one of my friends who lives in Florida and ordered the oil. And she was like, she came back and said, hey, I was skeptical buying this oil, but I'm glad I did, because many oils that I buy and I use leaves this heaviness and heavy feel on my skin, especially in summer, and I don't want to put anything. But as a Floridian in Florida, I was able to use this product in Florida all summer, and I had no feel of that heaviness on my skin. In fact, I was delighted to use the oil every day. I mean, so, you know, hearing those kind of things about the product is just so humbling. And guess what? Just yesterday, I produced our first hair product.
Oh, wait, you've launched?
No, it's launching on Friday the 7th.
Oh, you produced it? Oh, yeah, got it.
So I just made the product yesterday, and I'm super excited about it. I tested a part of the product myself, and I'm seeing the you know how, see, so part of the issue for me is when I'm using the product myself and I'm seeing the difference, I'm like, wait, am I dreaming? Like, is this really me making this product, right? My edges, for instance, I have this traction alopecia, and it's really, is huge. And I've tried different products that are, you know, made by small business owners, organic and all of that. But it doesn't matter.
Is it from hair pulling or what? What causes it?
I think mine is a combination of hormones.
Okay. Not like hairstyles or anything like that.
No,
like,
mine was hugely hormones.
Okay.
Mine was hugely hormone based. Because I didn't used to do heavy hairstyles. People will say, oh, it's because of wigs. I'm not a wig person. I seldom wear wigs, right? And so it wasn't really all of that. But I knew, and in timeline, because of some of the kind of treatments that I had for, you know, some health issues, I knew where that was coming from. I could trace it back to, you know, some of those things. So it was more of hormones and medications and all of that. And so I started trying the oil base for the souffle. So it's a hair butter. And I started trying it. And sis, I'm seeing changes. Like, my hairline is beginning to get a transformation. I find it unbelievable, right? Sometimes when I see, you know, the transformations from the product. So yes, now we have skincare and we are, you know, moving into health products as well. The truth is that another thing that makes us to stand out, right, as a business is that we also have a focus on really empowering and supporting traders in local communities. For instance, I made an intentional move to buy products from traders in the community where they actually make
the products. Yeah, so it's like cheaper, and it's also,
it is cheaper
directly engaging them, so that way you're cutting out them. Yeah.
Yes, and so,
and also, the money goes back to them 100%. Yeah,
exactly. Yes, and we're also creating that access to markets for, you know, those farmers, right? And of course, the main reason is also for the authenticity of the product, right? Sadly, the organic skincare market is two sides. And I didn't realize that early on until I got in. And I had somebody who wanted to try Eriglow products reach out to me and say, oh, you people that say organic, that's when I'll use it now and it will be bleaching my skin. I said, bleaching. I'm like, how? And this person is US-based. So I didn't expect that kind of, you know, thought from that person. I said, no, auntie, no, this is not that kind of product. Give it a try and see. I'm happy she did, and you know, she loved it. But I found out, what I found out was that unfortunately you do have businesses and products that claim to be organic who are not organic.
Organic, yeah.
Right. And so there is that challenge for us to really be able to stand and say to people that no, we are truly organic, right? Okay. Many of these ingredients are edible, right? That's how intentional we are. Mm. When you go to Ghana, they eat a lot of shea butter, and some other communities in West Africa eat shea butter, right? The baobab tree is a miracle in itself. I grew up in the north, and so we snacked on baobab fruit powder a lot, right? That's part of, they use baobab leaves for soup in northern Nigeria and in other communities in Africa.
Is it when they put inside yogurts and drinks and all that?
Exactly, yes, that's what I'm saying.
That it's now, like slightly tart.
It's becoming a superfood across the world as well, right?
Baobab, I imagine.
You know, so those are the kind of ingredients that we are using, right? You have aloe vera in our soap, so we are very particular and very intentional. In fact, there was one time that I had to differentiate between the kind of oil that we use for fragrance, right? So we use essential oils, not fragrance oil, right? Mm. It's fragrance in the product. Because
so it's less heavy, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We really do want to stick with that organic offering that we and stay in that space that we're saying that our products are organic and really keep it organic. So we're really staying in nature, very close to nature as much as possible, and staying away from synthetic ingredients, which unfortunately many businesses that call themselves organic or many products that are organic use synthetic products.
I mean, thanks for the clear articulation of your product source, the cleanliness of your product, how you even, you know, put things together, and then also what your products really do. Mm-hmm. I can imagine that it's not really been a walk in the park, but you're making it go, you know, and that's really impressive to see. One thing I always, the more I do these episodes like this, the more I realize that, wow, like, when we come on the show, when we talk about ourselves or our processes, it's a way of capturing that present state we're in, right? Mm-hmm. And so I've done some episodes in the past where I go, I listen, I was like, wow, I can't even remember when I was in this phase of life, but mm-hmm. I imagine during that time it felt like so overwhelming, right? Mm-hmm. So let's imagine 5 years from now, you're listening to this and Eriglow has gone to that point where you wanted to go. What do you want to say to Eriglow now? But it's more for Eriglow in the future. Basically, in 5 years' time, what would you want Eriglow to be? And how would you want to articulate that right now? Capture that process right now.
Well, thank you. To the Eriglow of right now, I'll say lean in and trust the process. It will work out. You may not see it, but it's a journey of faith, and faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So faith, in as much as it is something you want to see, you will see it. It is still an evidence. You will see it. When it comes to as a business entity, I'm looking forward to us not just, you know, making products, but also sourcing and, you know, sourcing our ingredients more, right? I was talking to my older sister yesterday who helps with, you know, creating formulations for Every Glow. And I said to her, we were talking about where to get some ingredients from. And part of the big issues for us was, you know, the authenticity of this ingredient. And I said to her, I think that's an opportunity for us, right? Can we start looking at how to, you know, create this ingredient, right? For instance, some fruit powders, right? Then I said, you know, what it is for us to have certain equipment and be able to create these powders ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm looking beyond us creating the butters, the oils, the soaps, and all of that, but also be a source for authentic ingredients as well. And I'm sort of like looking into that big factory, you know, where things are happening. I have researched and tried to use mass production, right, or have somebody else produce our product, people with larger facilities, you know,
but it's not, yeah,
for us. But it has just not worked out. And I see the Every Glow in its own factory one day soon, where we are, you know, as I'm talking, I'm sort of like seeing, you know, the line in the factory, products moving from this to that, different sections for, you know, the different products that, you know, we make, right? Another thing for me is seeing the lives that the business will transform. You know, whether it is 10 employees or 100 employees, that's a joy in itself, right? You know, there was recently one of the people that I buy oils from reached out to me from Kano, Nigeria, and she said to me, oh, my friend, you have not bought products from me, you know, but I still have oil is what it is, because I got a really large quantity of oil from Nigeria from her last year, and I still have that. Just knowing that somebody is counting on your business for their own growth.
Sustainability, yeah.
And their sustainability hits me differently. So I'm seeing us being able to create, you know, opportunities for others and, you know, create a sustainable environment as well, you know, for others. And creating, you know, a means of income, you know, for others. I look forward to us, you know, sitting in shelves of grocery stores across the world, breaking beyond boundaries, right, and being able to get to customers more easily. I would really love to see that sooner rather than later, us being able to get to more customers in a much easier and a more seamless way. Every Glow in 5 years, I'm seeing us in some $1 million figure-wise. I want to see the $1 million in our books. By God's grace, and I trust that as we have spoken it out, the angels are stamping it.
Amen. Thank you so much. Now, as we round off this episode, I think it would be nice to kind of talk a little bit about just a few words, because you cut across two continents, you know, America and then Africa, specifically Nigeria, right? How do you bridge those two things? And what would you say are some of the elements from your upbringing in Nigeria that are infusing into your work right now?
There's two parts to it. let's focus on the good parts. Because, yes, I mentioned that, yes, we source our ingredients from local traders and farmers and all of that. But sis, the challenge associated with that is a whole conversation in itself. I grew up as an independent person, dangerously independent. And I think that's something that has really helped me with the business, right? So far, I make the product myself, right? And many a times, I don't know if I would be able to do that if I wasn't independent. In Africa or in Nigeria, I think we learn early in life to be sustainable in a way, or to be self-sustaining. And we make do with what we have to move forward, right?
Yeah.
Could we have some things better?
Probably. Absolutely. Yeah.
But the tenacity in an average African is huge. And that's one of the things that has helped me a lot. Many a times when I'm overwhelmed, for instance, yesterday I was on my feet for 5 hours straight. No kidding. And I looked at myself and I asked myself some questions. What I told myself, or how I answered myself, is, hey, this is something that is about to solve problems. And that's what strengthened me. Right. I guess for me, when I was growing up, the phenomenon of having mentors or coaches was not really there, right? At least when I was growing up in Nigeria. And so if you're waiting for anybody to really cheer you on before you do things, you wait for so long. Oh, would I wish for somebody to cheer me on and, you know, encourage me every time that I have to, you know, create product? I'm looking at myself. I have to start making the next batch of soap now, and it does take a while for that to happen. The whole process in itself is huge, right? If I have to wait on somebody to
keep waiting,
you know, I won't make that progress. And so I'm really grateful. And I want to give a shout out to my parents who taught us, especially my mom, to be content and not to be lazy. Male or female, in my family, you have to do the work, right? Senior or junior, you have to do the work. You know, I was thinking about this earlier. Let me tell you a story. When we were growing up in a place where, in fact, where we grew up, Nasarawa really taught us how to be sustainable. It was very remote, a very remote city at the time when we went there. My mom had to quickly become a farmer. Imagine a Lagos girl becoming a farmer.
Wow.
Like, she had to, they had the college that, because she had gone to work with a federal establishment, right? And so the school had land, and so they gave some of their staff. My mom would plant melon, she would plant corn, she would plant in our backyard. In the compound, you would have okra, you would have vegetables and everything. And we were involved in that process. See, we would go and wash egusi, right, melon, in the stream or at the stream. at a young age. I'm talking when we were still in like primary school, right? And so those are some of the things, and that's kind of like where I'm coming from, and things that are helping me, right, in my journey. I'm not looking at anybody's, you know, whatever. The point is, Kemi, what can you create? I love to create solutions. I love to help people, right? So those are the things that are driving me, being able to help others. You know, being able to spread joy and solutions to others. Those are the things that are driving me and that is keeping me going. And that's really helped me with every group.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much. I mean, there's so much to learn from your story. I think the most beautiful part of it is just the resilience you have and the confidence you have in your product. And as someone who has used it, and I can attest to just the goodness, inherent goodness that is in there, I think I would highly encourage anyone listening to this group to go check them out. Which brings us to my final question. Where can people find you out and all of that fancy stuff?
Of course, yes. www.eryglow.com is the website to go to order products. Let the orders begin to roll in. We are happy and excited to really help you. Focus currently on the US market right now, whilst we figure out, you know, reaching out other places in North America and beyond, because really our initial market was, you know, Europe and, you know, North America, but we still have a hurdle to cross to get there. But yeah, we're focused on the US market and our shipping is quite swift. Our website is www.eriglow.com. That's where to go. And we are also on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Eriglow. So join the family of the Glowing Glory and come get your natural glow enhanced. Happy to serve you soon.
Awesome, guys. Go check out her line of products. I ordered from them recently and it was very seamless. I got an email when the shipping was done and it was delivered so swiftly. So the integration is well done. This has just been a wonderful time chatting with you today, Temi. I really, really enjoy hearing just the backstory of your business. And I guess the summary here is that this journey is a testament to the power of resilience, passion, and just all of the cultural heritage that comes with her. You know, as you can recall, her talking about the challenges of immigration to building a successful business that celebrates her roots, you know, from the northern part of Nigeria, even some part of the southern part. I think her story is an inspiration to aspiring entrepreneurs everywhere. So thank you all for joining us on this episode of the Multiple Podcast. If you enjoy this conversation, be sure to subscribe to our channel and leave us a review. We're on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. And don't forget to check out Temi's amazing skincare products at eryglow.com. We'll tag all of that in the show notes. And remember, no matter where you're from or what challenges you're facing, your dreams are valid and achievable. So until next time, keep shining. I remain your host, Nocibo, and thanks for joining us today. Thanks a lot, Temi.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I can't wait to, you know, bring you back when things have gotten to a point where we need to celebrate more wins. But I feel like this is you're reaching like a critical point in your business. I feel that strongly for you. So keep it going. We believe in you.
Thank you. I'll be glad to come back and share the wins as well.
Of course.
You love it.
All right. Love you. Yeah. Let me know.